You are listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Station, playing shows from the current week, in the hopes you'll take a listen, find something interesting, maybe informative, and maybe inspiring. Thank you for being here. Be safe. Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get shungite to the masses. You are entering the shungite zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggy Shack Radio. And welcome to the Shungite Radio Show. It's October 9th, 2018. My name's Nancy Hopkins. It's being produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. And with me is my co-host, Derek Condit, and one of my best friends here, Jan Moore, who's now Jan Shaw, and we'll get her to explain all that. Welcome, guys. How are we doing?
Wow. I'm doing real well. Thanks, Nancy.
Jan?
Uh-oh. I'm doing great, thank you. I was just telling Derek that with all these energies going on at the moment, I've been needing so much sleep, and I only woke up about 10 minutes before the show. So, but I'm here.
You know, I went through a period where I was sleeping like 5 hours and waking up fine and going through the day fine. But lately it's like, no, I want that 8 hours in the last, I'd say, a good week. So I don't know how long it's been going on with you, but definitely I'm feeling the need to sleep.
Yeah, it's not so much during the day. I'm fine during the day and I'm going to bed at the normal time. But in the morning, it's really weird. It's like I've got to carry on with the dreams I was having, you know. I can't get up yet because I'm still in this dream. So I'm sure there's some stuff going on out there in the cosmos, so and thankfully I'm not set to a particular timetable, so I'm very fortunate in that respect.
Yeah, you still sort of think about time in relationship to Great Britain?
No, what I meant was that because I work for myself, I don't have to get up at a set time, you know, and get into a job or anything, so I can set my timetable as I want to do. And of course, I'm still very aware of the time in Britain because, you know, I talk to my daughter every Sunday and, you know, it's usually around 5:30 there, what they call tea time, which is like 10:30 our time. So, you know, because I've still got all this activity related to the UK, I'm still very aware of it.
Yeah, doing radio, you get a different feeling for time, too. You know, just, it's like, you're aware that you're doing it at this time, but on the other side of the world, people may be sleeping. I mean, it's like, time is such a concept in our heads. You know, what matters to us is trying to figure it out, and it's all screwed up. I don't have any concept really of what time is anymore because it just seems like every time I think about it, I'm going like, "What do you mean it's Monday? What do you mean it's 5 o'clock? Where'd the day go? Where did the week go?" It's odd. Okay, so we're gonna let you sit there for a second. I'm gonna talk to Derek. We'll let you get your focus on waking up. Did you get your coffee
Thank
yet?
You.
Are you a
coffee? Oh, yes, I've got coffee. Yeah, that's essential.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now, Great Britain, they drink coffee over there, or is it only tea?
Oh, no, they drink coffee. Over there, I always used to start with tea, and that's English tea, you know, with milk and everything else. And then I'd move on to coffee. You know, 11 o'clock is, you know, coffee time. So you'd start with the tea and then go on to coffee. Because I used to hate coffee first thing in the morning. But now I've got so used to coffee being the, you know, the primary drink. And I haven't drunk English tea since I was over here. I've drunk herbal tea, but not English tea. So it'd be interesting when I go back in November to get back into the English tea culture.
Well, now I hope you're putting the 3 shungite nuggets in the coffee cup.
Well, I have the shungite in the water that it's made with.
Yeah, but see I'm not sure how long it lasts. You've got the charge to the water. But if it's not continually being fueled by the shungite, there's a certain amount of hang on time, you know, but then it just dissipates. So if you're like I am, where I fill up the coffee cup and then it's well cold before I finish it, it's better to have the nuggets right there in the coffee cup too.
All right. Well, I will do that then. Yes. Definitely. Thank you for that tip, Nancy.
Well, there's never enough shungite as far as I can figure. You know, I'm always finding something new to do with it. And okay, so let's say hi to Derek. Derek, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing real well. Just prepping for the winter. We're already seeing snow at the top of the mountains. Yeah, we're deep in the mountains here, so we got snow just right above our house.
Okay, tell us where our babies are at, the bees. What's the stat? I mean, we know we're going into winter. What's happening with them? Because a lot of people really don't know about this.
Sure. I was out there yesterday, actually, so I kind of poked around in some of the hives to get an idea. And I generally try and not be too invasive, so I'm not out there every week opening up the hives, being real disruptive. That's generally something you don't want to do because you can harm a lot of bees during that process. So we're kind of a hands-off and, of course, you know, chemical-off. But they're doing real well. So on the couple of hives I opened, there's still 3 boxes high, which is relatively high. So there's a lot of bees in numbers still going on right now. And we're normally the attrition rate at this time of year, a lot more. So the better part of the drones, the boys, would already be removed from the colony this time. So they'd be outside or dead under the hive. And just the female workers would be inside. But that hasn't happened yet, so there's kind of a delay there, and that's interesting. So we'll monitor that. And then the inspections I did were – and I alternated. So I did 2 yesterday and then 2, I think, 2 or 3 days ago. And I was looking for things such as mites to get some idea if there were any, and I've had no mites this year. And I actually would have expected to find a small amount, but just nothing. And then again, no sickness or disease in any of the hives. There's no fungus. No, let me see. I'm trying to think. The frames, other things you would look at, you'd inspect the frames to see if there was maybe there's wax moths. There's all kinds of parasites and pests that can get into a beehive and cause problems, especially in this area being so moist in the mountains. And we had none of that still. So they're looking really well. I'm going to take off one of the 3 boxes hives. So if you picture the beehives, again, typically in a field, the white tall boxes. We're going to shorten them down to about 2 feet tall, which would be 2 boxes approximately, and just leave them approximately 18 frames of honey to go through the winter each hive. So they have more than enough winter honey. excuse me. And then as far as on the prepping the hives, what we're going to – of course, every winter is different, so we're not sure how the winter is going to be. But we don't do a whole lot of prepping. We do have some – exterior, one thing you can do is take bales of straw or hay, and basically if your hives are in such a place you can do this, you wrap them around, you kind of bury the beehives in straw or hay, and that'll hold as an insulating barrier and keep a lot of the snow off, as long as the entrance has an opening for the bees to come and go for cleansing flights, they're all right. So we're looking at that this year, if it's, because again, it's going to be extreme out here relative to the area, extreme, so it'll get in the negative degrees Fahrenheit. But we're going into winter strong, so I'll keep you updated. We're going in with 4 shungite beehives. We did merge one several weeks ago with another hive, so we're 4 strong right now, and that's where we've tried to maintain it. again, by not catching the additional swarms and splits that happened this year. We let them just migrate to the mountainside. So we're doing real well.
Okay, what people may not quite get if they're new at the bee thing, because this was kind of, I mean, makes sense, is that when they start to go into the wintertime, of course, they don't have the pollen and everything, the flowers aren't there, so they go into a winter cycle. And at that point, they throw out the drones, the workers, the males, okay? Not because they hate them, but because there's no purpose in feeding them. and so they, because it's all, you know, I mean, it's the concept of keeping the queen alive with enough of a starter beehive type of thing to get it going. So what they're doing is they're getting rid of the drones because they don't do anything really except kind of protect the hive. And what else do drones do during the season?
Pretty much, yeah, drones are for mating and protection for the most part. That's what they'll do. And then, yeah, and just like you're saying, they'll remove the drones during the wintertime so that bee ball, because the bees will group together in a virtual ball inside of the beehive around the brood and the queen, and just kind of, you know, what's interesting is it looks like a toroidal field, so the bees will migrate from the outside to the inside throughout the winter, so they can rotate the warmth amongst themselves, all the time having the brood and or the queen, both usually, in the very middle of that ball, even though the ball extends. So picture the beehive, and then there's 10 frames inside that you can take out holding honeycomb, so the brood will be right in the center of that. Even though there's frames going through, the bees will build their ball among the, you know, the middle sections of the frames, in between frames. So that's the point. And then if you have too many, like you mentioned, the drones would eat the food, and then they'd push the female bees to the outer side where they would get cold, and you have some losses there. So they do size down probably, it varies. So it's a relative answering a question, but in size wise, maybe a tenth of the size, of a full strong hive during spring and summer. The numbers will be that low, and it won't necessarily just be drones gone. That some of the workers, the numbers just won't generate as fast at the end of the season for females as well. So the numbers do drop quite a bit.
And yet I was very interested in the concept that the female bees, whereas they live, what, a couple weeks during the season, they can actually last the entire winter cycle, correct?
Yeah, their general lifespan is just maybe 3 weeks during the average harvest season, spring, summer, fall sort of deal. But they've been watched or monitored to live over 9 months in the winter, one bee. So they can extend their life cycle that long or longer when needed to ensure that the colony has a strong enough and or warm ball during the winter to start again in the spring. So it's amazing how they do that.
Now, the other thing that we should tell people is that the apiary he's got right now is inside, it's a large building. We call it the shed, but it's not. It's big. That he's actually got them inside, and he's made cuttings in the wall so they can go outside. So he's not going to have a lot of the environmental pressures that those hives have that aren't protected like this. And still, you've got to watch the cold and that sort of thing, right? You don't have that. It's not exactly. Well, you wouldn't want it heated because then they would think it's summertime. Mm-hmm. They should be out working.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't want to trick them and say, hey, the sun's up, it's spring, and they'll all come flying out and freeze. And that'll happen. But yeah, they're in a metal shop, let's say, and then no, it's not heated. Now, the benefit of that and the reason we did it was to avoid vandalism, not only human, but animals. So it can happen both ways. As I mentioned, we're in the mountains, so we have bears and coyotes, raccoons, possums, the list goes on. And then unfortunately, some people who will go around and for whatever reason, just kind of shove over beehives. So we avoid all that and keep them out of sight. And as Nancy mentioned, we basically on the inside of this shop, that's maybe 25 foot by 25 foot long with a concrete floor, we push them up against the inside wall and cut an entrance on through the wall just enough to slide the beehive entrance through. So now they're entering and exiting from the outside, and I'm working on them from the inside. And they do have exits from inside the shop, various places. I have large doors I can open, or there's openings up near the roof. So if I'm opening a beehive inside, inspecting or whatever I'm doing in there, and they do fly out in the shop, I simply leave the lid slightly open and they'll just go right back in the hive or exit and enter through their entrance. So that's not a problem either. It works real well.
Now, you've had not just no loss, but you have increased the population of the bees. What? You doubled it at least, right?
Oh, we've more than doubled, and it's hard to even keep track of it sometimes because it'll be a couple times this year. I know we've had a couple other swarms I haven't mentioned on the radio that have happened because I didn't realize it until I got back into the beehive maybe a week later. And you can tell from the numbers and or they're generating queen bee cells that look like small peanuts. So, for example, a week or two ago, probably a couple weeks ago, I got in one of the hives and noticed all those peanuts laying against along one of the frames. Well, there's queen bees in every one of those. And that's an indication that hive had either, swarmed or it's replacing the queen bee. And in this case, because the numbers of the colony were lower, not by huge, maybe 30%, that told me that they had swarmed and started a new colony out in the wild somewhere, which is great. We love that. That boosts our natural populations, and our bees are disease-free and healthy, so they'll mix the genetics with the natural ones, and they'll just spread from there. So we do have a lot. It's hard to pinpoint, how many times they've at least doubled, but it's clearly more than that. And our neighbors have made the statements this year. They've never seen bees. We moved to this area just a matter of months ago. And since we came in these splits, the flowers, the blooming, the fruit trees, everything, everyone's amazed. And more often than not, they don't know why, because they don't know we have the bees. But the bees have had a huge effect on our small town of Darrington here and the local populations of bees.
Oh, that's stunning. So people have you actually can see visually the effect of the bees simply because they were out there pollinating, so everything is growing more. And neighbors have actually...
Okay.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I shouldn't say this, but good and bad. So here's an example. A lot of us have apple trees, and what happened was because the bees are pollinating so well, a lot of us have lost... The trees haven't died, but we've lost branches because there's so many apples on these trees. They got pollinated so much more that they're just having so many more apples that some of the larger, older branches are outweighted from the apples that are on there, from the plethora of apples. And they just, some of them will break off. And again, it didn't kill the tree or anything, but that was one obvious sign when our next door neighbor walks up and she says, yeah, I have so many apples this year. And she's been there 20 something years that the branches are starting to break and bend down. And then we can see it just through the neighborhood and not to mention our own trees. On the how many apples and whatnot are on there. So it's, and the gardens are the same thing. So that's, we benefit all the, everybody around us because the bees will travel for up to 7 miles from their hive if needed. So we know they're covering this small town. It's maybe 5 blocks in length. So it's worked out real well.
Well, my question here is when we first were talking about this, we were concerned about the neighbors knowing you had the bees. Now, mm-hmm. Now they can see why you have the bees. If they,
go ahead.
I know it's not become an issue really, but has it? I mean,
no, most of them still don't know that we have the bees. It'd be the next door neighbor would be the ones because our bees have actually. When they did a split, so there were so many in the hive, they decided, make a new queen and go ahead and make a new house somewhere. They actually went in this neighbor's house, their yard in their tree, which is how, and then I saw them out there. They were talking about, do we need to call a bee catcher or a pest control? And I'm like, no. That's not going to happen. And then I had to kind of dime myself out that I'm a beekeeper. And the entrances to the beehives, by the way, are hidden behind a fire, so I have some firewood that I've cut, and I built a small fence around it. So it looks like a wood pile, but it's kind of got an opening. So anyway, they're hidden out of sight. So when this happened to the neighbor's house, the swarms, and we have a lot of this on video, my son and I going over there catching them, but we went over with the ladders and boxes and shake the trees and drop the swarms in there and do what we can so that particular neighbor knows. But, for example, the other ones down the street, I haven't really, I haven't talked to them about the bees yet, but, you know, the people at the coffee stands I go to occasionally, they know about us now. So it really depends, but for the most part, we're not really known that the bees are here, but they're definitely seeing the results of it.
So if it does become an issue, you've got, let's say, ammunition. You can say, well, yes, I've got the bees. Have they stung anybody? No, but look what they've done to nature.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's exactly. In blossom, yep. And there's so many apples, the tree limbs are breaking. Sorry about that. Can you talk to the bees and explain? or the trees? I mean, that could be a little bit of a problem. I mean, it happened a lot, or just, I mean...
Oh, no. It's not like old groves of trees are dropping. No, we're talking about a couple of them, and the neighbors are... And for the most part, it's really just the trees looking really heavy just because they're full of apples. And they're all falling off now, and the deer are, you know, coming up and enjoying
the
apples.
See how great it is? Now the deer are involved in it. Bees are wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. You're right. They fed the deer this year, and the apples are just, again, everywhere in great abundance. So the deer coming in from the mountainside, cleaning that up, and it all works out.
Okay, we do. All you have to do is get 3 pieces of shungite and put it on your hives. That's what started Derek on this trip. And, you know, why wouldn't you? Stop using all your chemicals, because that's what he did. He never had chemicals. But then this year, just go through again, because I want people to understand the impact of this, where you got the bees this year to start the hive.
Sure.
And what condition they were in.
Okay, sure. Generally, when you're a new beekeeper, you start with what's called a NUC, and that's NUC, and it's a small starter beehive that has about half of the honeycomb frames a normal beehive would have. So it's approximately 5. And you have about 3 pounds of bees. They actually, believe it or not, weigh them out and put them in there. And so you'll purchase these NUCs from generally California. And these are split off of always chemical treated beehives, generally from the almond fields of California, which are, you know, just chemicals sprayed all year long at different times of the year, not to mention the other crops that are nearby. The bees are taken to pollinate throughout the year. So they'll start with these beehives. And within these beehives, the frames on honeycomb that should be near pure white or maybe a light hint of gold, they're generally a really dark brown or almost black often. And that's from the abundance and excess of chemical buildup from either treating the bees to help, you know, to hopefully manage the pest and disease, and or it's from the chemicals from the crops that the bees are being taken to pollinate. So the mixture, regardless where it comes from, is in that honeycomb and within the bee system. So when you buy a NUC, that's what you're getting, a sickened, weakened hive. So we purchased 3 of these this year from a California distributor as an example of showing how easy and how anyone can start it with any beehives, and these were a different breed of bees than we had the previous year. And all we did was take them out of that.
We seem to have lost Derek.
I thought that was me, actually. Not
no.
I hear you. Cause...
No. He should be able to come right back on. There he is. Okay. All right. You dropped off.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, you did. All of a sudden, you just were gone. And you've been gone for probably 90 seconds. So where you left us, you had the dirty frames and the bee nooks. You just explained how that was.
Yeah, I apologize for that. Again, we are in the mountains and we have poor reception out here, so we'll have just iffy service on cell phone and internet. So when we get this nook, in essence, we have the five dirty frames I mentioned and the chemically treated bees. So we'll stop all treatments, put them in a new clean beehive, and then basically let the bees, as the generations progress, they'll come out. Again, we're removing the dirty frames because there is the chemical in these treated frames. So you have to remove that, and you remove them slowly over time, maybe every week, every other week, remove a frame and replace it so they can build new fresh honeycomb. And in just a matter of weeks, you now have a completely new beehive, at least the beehive in frames. And by now, the bees have started, the generations are moving and progressing. So now you're going to have untreated bees. And I would say it only took maybe 3 weeks. But let me note also, when you receive these initial starter hives or nooks, the bees are very agitated and aggressive. I mean, I would be too if I was treated or chemicals blown into my house for my whole life and I had to live in that environment. I'd be pretty pissed off. So the bees are too, and they're aggressive, and they'll warn you and sting you, and that's how they generally arrive. But to get back, so about 3 weeks passed, the aggression's gone. No suits, no gloves required. We don't need smoke. The bees have calmed down. And that's, again, we're not doing any treatments of any kind. All we additionally did was add the three shungite nuggets to the entrance. And we didn't even paint the outside of the beehives initially. But as they grow, we add painted shungite boxes on. But really, it's all about just stopping the chemical treatments. So removing the bees from that environment and then adding the shungite nuggets. And immediately, including this year, we recorded video within the first days of the bees tending and preferring to visit the shungite nuggets at the entrance. When they, you know, leave or return to the beehive, they'll just kind of get their shungite bath, walk over the nuggets, and then walk on in the hive. And we've seen that for the past 2 years. And then that's all we really do. And then we have no losses, no colony collapse disorder. We've had no fungus issues. And I don't know, I haven't met one other beekeeper in our area that has not had issues. So we're definitely on the extreme end of the scale regarding the sickness and disease and losses, having zero. The average in our area, it's relative where you're talking about in the U.S. or the world, but the losses are minimum 40% to 100% every year of all your beehives and or colonies. And I'll finish up here real quickly, but Maureen and I drove to a friend's house yesterday where, again, we're out in the mountains. So there's a certain property that generally has about 50 beehives on it. They're down to about three. And we saw that last night. It was later night, so we didn't stop and talk to and ask what the problem was, but their beehives are wiped out or gone. They had three standing there. And from what I could tell, and you can tell by looking at a hive, whether it's an active hive or not often. For example, if it's a cold night and the lid's not on there, well, you know, there's no bees in there because the beekeeper would put the lid on. So things like that are a giveaway. Or if there's too much brush grown over the entrance, you know that that hive's just been abandoned and it's probably not active. So signs like that are one way. But this was our largest beekeeper in the area that I was aware of. And they would lease their beehives to fields for pollination to the crops, but they're completely wiped out. So I'll have to, you know, get touch bases with them and see what happened.
You got to go there and talk to these people because that's you're the research project and that's your, what do they call it? The sample group.
The control group?
Control group. You know, all around you, we have control group, and that's the data we need. Because even though, excuse me, we're not a nonprofit anymore, we still need to prove to people that this is what's happening. You know, and if you can go and, of course, I mean, we know sometimes beekeepers are not the easiest people to talk to. Wonder why that is. Jan, do you have any questions you'd like to ask Derek about bees?
Not that spring to mind immediately. I think the results that you're getting, Derek, are phenomenal. And, of course, we need these bees so much, don't we?
So, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
the fact that you're getting such great results, and hopefully you can help the poor guy down the road who's lost all of his with some of your wisdom.
Yeah, yeah, I'll definitely have to touch bases with them and see what the issue might have been and show them our results, and I'll give them the Shun Guide for free to try. I don't know how many times, because they're not out anything by trying it, putting a few black rocks on their entrance. So yeah, we'll touch bases with them.
Is there, you know, I know from posts that you've had on the Facebook groups before, is there a lot of resistance to beehives in the area? Are people against them? Is there an issue
Yeah, it's actually, and it's something that's not really known unless you're kind of in the beekeeping community or know someone, but often people have the misconception that, you know, bees, if there's a bee there, they see a person, they're going to come and sting you. Bees, they die when they sting you. Yeah, they don't want to sting. If you get stung, it's because you did something generally. And not knowingly often, you know, you maybe stepped on them or tried to brush them off of you and they landed on you. But if a bee's landing on you, it's because of the salt on you and they're just drinking that. No, a bee won't just fly out of there and just automatically land on you and sting you unless, let's say, you're blocking the entrance to their hive and you don't know it perhaps, or there's some kind of interference. You're actually doing something. And again, often the human more often than not won't know what they're doing. They'll think, oh, bee, and I just got stung. But there was a reason for it. So people will often have that misconception, or maybe they know someone who they think might be allergic to bees. So what's happened often is, and they've been caught sometimes, but people will go out at night and just vandalize beehives. And of course, like I say, most of the time you don't catch them, so you can't exactly ask them why they're doing it. If it's maybe just entertainment for them or see if you can push a hive and run away, I don't know what logic, but it happens. I've read about it all across the country. In fact, all across the world, by the hundreds sometimes. And it could be even something, as Nancy had mentioned, more often than not, beekeepers are a little more on the difficult side to talk to, at least the males, the men involved, for whatever reason that is. So maybe it's a competition thing going on there. It's really hard to know, but unfortunately, a lot of beehives do get vandalized, and you can tell if it's an animal or not, of course, because, you know, usually the bear will get in there and eat the honeycomb. And if it's people, you know, you'll see the foot tracks or tire tracks and whatnot. And often, I shouldn't say often, but occasionally what has happened, and it happened in our area, excuse me, probably 2 months ago. Evidently, someone had an idea and they rented a flatbed truck. They had the gall, drove up to the beekeeper's yard, loaded up. They must have had a forklift on the back somehow, and I'm not sure how they did it, but they drove away in the middle of the night with, I don't remember the number, probably 70-something beehives just gone from a beekeeper's yard. And it's not always the case where the bees are right outside your door. So in my case, the bees are, you know, maybe 20 feet from my house. But in other cases, it's maybe your 5-acre plot that's, you know, 10 miles from your house, and that's where you keep your bees or whatnot. And those are the ones where the people will just drive up and just take your bees, or again, the vandalism. So we just prefer to avoid that and kind of, like, again, put them in the shop and make the entrance kind of concealed outside by the wood wall. And so unless you really know what you're looking for and it's a really busy bee day where the bees are coming and going, and where you can see a cloud of them, it's kind of hard to spot where the bees are coming from. But yeah, things do happen.
So it's another fear thing. We're afraid of it, so let's kill it.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a whole lot of factors in there, all of the above, but a lot of it's the fear thing, and we just don't want bees. I don't want to be stung, or my animals. And again, they think that the bees are just going to, you know, fly out of the colony and start attacking people and animals. That's not the case.
Now, interesting. When I was on the ranch in Austin looking after a bunch of Arabian horses, we actually had some of the African type bees move in, and they, of course, are really aggressive, and maybe people are affected by watching these movies with the killer bees.
That's a great point.
they were so aggressive. Yeah, mm-hmm. because the guys there were not that far from the where the swarm was. And literally, the bees took off after them. They were on a golf cart, and they were driving down the road in this golf cart with this swarm of bees going after them. We did get some people in to actually take the bees away, so they didn't actually destroy the swarm. But, you know, so many people get affected by what they see on TV, and they think, oh, all bees are like that, and they don't realise how critical these little creatures are to our survival.
Sure. Yeah, you're right about the Africanized bees.
Go over how the African, because there is a difference in how it happened. Do you remember the story of the African bees, how they got here?
I don't remember all the specifics of it. I know they were brought in for testing and sampling and whatnot. I think it was in South America, and then they basically got released from there and basically migrated north. And that, you know, it's the quick answer to it. They weren't brought in bulk all across the U.S. or anything, but they started south and started moving up. And Jan made a great point about that. So I was only talking about our now native, even if they were brought in decades ago, honeybees. Now there are the Africanized ones and there's actually different types, but that's what they're kind of grouped together as, that are highly aggressive. And if you just get near their hive without blocking it or any of the other things I said, yes, they will attack. So there's always that type of bee. And even, it could have been something like the golf cart's vibration nearby antagonized them so much. And then also if you go, they're chemically treated bees, they're going to be more aggressive. So it's all relative to the bees you're around. But that's I would definitely, in the areas, Arizona, New Mexico, all of those places, there are the more aggressive bees to be careful of.
This was Texas, so they'd obviously, on that southern state line, obviously they'd come up from South America.
Yeah, we'll have to get Walt to make some kind of a device that will put out a shungite field and create such an environment that the African bees will just turn docile and loving. And I'm not even BSing here. I'm saying, let's put Walt on this. I bet he can.
No, it's a great idea. I'm actually looking to make a trip to Arizona next year sometime. My father lives there and a couple of friends. So I'm going to, of course, have a pocket full of shungite, and I'm going to try and talk to as many beekeepers as I can and set something up there and you know, see what we can do there.
So, Derek, are the beekeepers very antisocial because they're subject to all this misinformation from people about bees, and so they need to keep their work quiet so that they don't become victims to these hive attackers?
Mm-hmm. It is some of that. Again, you know, each beekeeper is different. So, but what I tend to find, and I hate to generalize like this, but the female beekeepers go into it with just huge open hearts and love and all the right reasons and realizing, and it just seems to click and they get it. And us guys, who tend to be more aggressive, so maybe that's why some, and I'm not saying all of them, again, I hate to generalize, but they're more, you know, aggressive individuals, I'll just say that way, tend to be. And so maybe more individual and say, I wouldn't say antisocial, but just not as social. So the more those loner type people who go out there and just kind of do it all on their own and that way. So it's definitely a different mix there. And then, you know, I kind of fall in the middle because I'm not around a whole lot of people. So I understand being away from people. But I definitely like being around people. So it's there's definitely the whole mix there. So if I may say,
you strike me as someone who has a great balance of divine masculine and feminine. And of course, you know, the women are possibly, this is a hypothesis, looking at the creative impact of the bees, just like you were saying before about the huge increase you've had locally in the crops, you know, the apples and everything else. So perhaps they don't look at it just from a commercial point of view in terms of, well, I'll make all this, they'll make all this honey and I'll sell it. They're also looking at the other benefits of the bees. So maybe the guys who are antisocial need a bit more of the divine feminine in them.
That's a great point, and you're right. Yep. The ladies go at it with the right intent.
Well, I do think that it is not only intent. I think it is the vibratory nature of a female versus the vibratory nature of the male. After all, these bees kill off the males when winter comes. I mean, you know.
We're only so useful, only for a short time.
No, but from the standpoint of, I know from talking to not only Derek, but Valerie Sohem, who was talking in terms of what happened to them metaphysically in the way that they started looking at life. And I can tell you from my interaction with the bees that at the bees level, that weave of bee, there is a totally different type of energy, first off, which you would expect, but there is a sentience that is very, very intense in that every bee seems to have their own identity, but then that identity is very much tied to what team they're on. Not only are they male or female, but the females, what is my job? Because they get different jobs, and even the same bee will have different jobs as they get older, correct? Isn't that true?
Correct. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. They'll work through the jobs as they progress. Mm-hmm.
So you've got these different energies that individualize them. It's not, that everybody's working the same, the Borg. I love the fact that they gave us the Borg so we can explain some things. So it's not that. And then on top of that, there is this unification of loyalty to a queen. And so if you look at the way that they operate as a society, it is very feministic. And the energy is that. And so a female that is going into this environment is going to already be very similar in the frequency that they're bringing into it. So I think that they start off with a better set of energy frequencies to really, really begin to understand and to merge with the beehive and then the bee weave. And Derek just happened to be the kind of guy that is, like you say, balanced between the two energies. And so, I mean, Derek, tell Jan, if you can, the metamorphosis from when you first got interested in the bees and studied them to where you are now, if you want.
I'm trying to figure out where to actually pick up from that.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
Get you started. Okay, so what was it? I know that you started getting interested in bees and studied them for a long time before you actually did anything. What prompted that interest? Did you feel now that you were being led to it? Or was there some episode that really sort of caught your attention?
Oh, okay. I've been interested in bees my whole life. I've always had a draw to them for one reason or another. Regardless if I was just driving by a field and saw some out there, I was like, I'd be interested and stop and look at them. And then slowly over the years, I would do research. Let's just bring it up to about 3 years before I started beekeeping, which was 3 years ago. I started just going in overdrive online, researching about bees. I'm not big on, I'm more of a blunt person and rather than talking around. So just to get there quickly, I was intuitively led to do it. So I would get online, I would research bees. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Why is this being brought to me? So I'd do more research. It'd lead me to this direction, another. I'd learn about the chemicals because I was like the average person. I just thought, oh, bees. I didn't realize that they were being, or they had all these different diseases and pests and mites and different things, and that they were being chemically treated. And I started putting together that, well, wait a minute, this is getting in the honey and we're eating it, and just going through the stages of being aware and realizing the intricacies of beekeeping. So I did a lot of research, watched everything I could on YouTube. And the funny part is I had never spoken. In fact, I was probably my second year of beekeeping before I even spoke to a beekeeper at all, to any degree. Because I started again getting on, listening to the shows, and they would explain how, you know, we would just all the treatments, all the chemicals. And then I hate to bring up some of these topics, but beekeepers often, they'll remove queens. They'll pinch queens, what they do at the end of the season. If they're not making enough brood and honey for that beekeeper, because it's all about money, they will literally grab the queen bee and pinch her or kill her and put in a new queen to basically, you know, start it up and get it going faster because they weren't happy with the status. So I'd learned about things like that, and I was just appalled. I couldn't believe that. I was thinking, are you kidding me? It just blew my mind. It wasn't even believable. So then I started realizing, I'm like, whoa, there's got to be something different. But there was no – so what we call ourselves, and there's very few others, but treatment-free beekeepers, again, where there's no chemicals or treatments of any kind, we started learning that was the route to go because we're organic. Our family eats organic by that point and non-GMO and whatnot. So we were aware and realized that, you know, that carries over not only into us, but these are harmful things for the bees and animals. So I did some research, and then again, I think it was, we're in our, so third year now. So 3 years ago, I was out with my wife, Maureen, at a co-op. So a farm store is often what they're called, where you can buy things for your farms. And there was a little starter, beehive box. It had everything. Well, most of the stuff included, a little, maybe a hoodie and a smoker and the initial box. And I was walking through the aisles, And I say intuitively, so I was led, I don't know how to explain this. Basically, I was just saying, let's just say nudged to go over to the next aisle. And I was thinking, okay, well, what do I need to see over there? And the whole aisle, it was springtime. And the whole aisle, of course, was stacked with the bee equipment and things like that. And I had just a couple of days before done some more research and looking into beekeeping online. So just went ahead and, you know, it was just too much. So I went ahead and just pulled the trigger and bought that starter bee kit. I had no bees to put in it or anything. I wasn't even sure where it was going, but I bought that starter kit. It was relatively cheap, maybe $150 to get going. Brought it home, opened it up, and started pulling things out and figuring it out as I went. And then researched where to look for those nooks that I talked about earlier, the starter hives, and kind of just took off from there in our first year. And then that first year was without shungite. So we had the chemically treated hives and lots of issues, naming issue. We had it from the fungus, disease, losses, pests, all of it. And then the second year is where we started the shungite. And it's all history after that.
Yes. And when you started the second year, you started with brand new hives and brand new bees.
That's so correct.
And the bees that you got were local. And oddly enough, Jan, they were Russian bees. smuggled in by the, what, grandfather of the guy that you got them from years before? that just tickled
yep, yep.
me.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me. You picked up on that the grandfather smuggled them in from Russia. I don't know how many generations before. And I just happened to, by chance, meet up the Russian beekeeper who I got the bees from.
Yeah.
I think that's a great story. You know, I love the way people are guided to doing what they're meant to do. I think it happens to all of us, doesn't it? I mean, it's the same with you and shungite, Nancy.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact that, you know, Derek, tell them how you found out about the shungite.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of along the same lines. It was, I was intuitively led again online a lot of, because I worked night shift graveyard for 16 years. So my hours would be different. So on my weekends, I would still be up. I would maintain that schedule over the weekend. So my nights off, I'd be up 2-3 in the morning doing my research or, listening to Nancy on the radio. and then I was always intuitively led. So I'd be led to shungite, and I'd find it. So I'd be led to certain rock and gym, I'm not sure what they'd be called, but websites or dealers or whatnot. Look, I'm trying to remember exactly how the first instance came to me. I thought I actually received an email with the word in it. And I was drawn to the word. I basically researched shungite and I was told, well, I need to know about this. I need to learn about this. And this is all intuitively given to me. So I'm thinking, okay. And it's hard to get that part across on how it actually comes through, but it's clear as day. And I know that I need to do something when it's presented to me. So I do it. And regardless if I understand what it's about or not, I'll go ahead and follow through and try and see where it goes. So I did that with the shungite and learned about it. And at this stage, I was like, you know, trying to pronounce it every other way. Didn't know what I was saying or what it was, and did the research. Led more places. I have some, a couple intuitive psychic friends as well that just by chance, of course, in the same time frame, happened to come through and mention things to me regarding it as well. And then I heard Nancy. I'd done the research online, and then that point I'd come across Nancy in that same time frame and Cosmic Reality and Walt and just listening to the radio shows. And then it all just tied together from there. And then a friend of mine who had actually spoken to them sometime before, Nancy had put out a call that she was looking for beekeepers, and I wasn't aware of that. So we got kind of tied in through a mutual friend, or actually somebody listening to the radio shows. So we were connected that way. And I'd already just started working with shungite. And then it was Nancy and I talked and brought to my attention, well, you know, let's give it a try in the bees. And I think during our conversation, I actually walked right out and put some shungite on the beehive's entrance. And that's where it kind of began. And that was 2016, I want to say.
I think that's so interesting.
I had to think about it. It's 2017. 2016 was when you lost all the hives.
18. Yeah. Okay. You're okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what made me hesitate. I'm going, really? Let me think about this.
Yeah. Like, I'm off on the years.
a year here or there. Yeah.
Could I just
sure, go ahead.
Mention something a little philosophical here, because, you know, when you were talking about earlier on about the males are all killed, you know, there's so much in nature that is a matriarchal society. And, you know, the history of humanity is that has been completely overthrown by becoming, you know, a male dominated society. And I was just thinking about, from a political point of view, there seems to be an awful lot of women out there at the moment that would like to kill off all the men.
You know, that you're absolutely correct about that. And the more I learned about the bees, the more I had a clearer analysis of what might be wrong with humanity. You know, it was just like, wow, because of the way they work.
Cooperatively.
Yeah, you know.
Communication.
Well, I'll tell you my first experience with really interacting with the bees, and I'm trying to go back. It was in 2017, and I somehow or another I tried to do a remote to find out who's the queen, because there's always a diva behind. Like, there's a diva of a pine tree, a diva of a raccoon. There's a diva, a goddess behind any kind of a species. There's a diva of cat. It's like the oversoul. It impregnates a certain frequency and creates certain versions of life. So I wanted to find out, I wanted to meet this oversoul or queen of queens of the bees. And so it was so easy. It was just like, oh, I think I want to do this. And boom, there she is. And of course, you're dealing in etheric energies, not 3D. So it's not a teeny little bug. It's a very big bug. A beautiful, unbelievable essence of just feminine energy. It's just like, was really the just the perfect feminine energy feeling. And but I couldn't connect telepathically. I wasn't getting a message, So I'm like starting to like, I'm trying to change my frequency, get there so I can, you know, communicate, and it's not happening. And so I said, all right, stop. Just stop and think of what's happening. And I feel now, because I'm focused, that I'm actually getting a huge amount of download of information, but that I can't seem to access it. And that's when all of a sudden I realized she had essentially sent me a burst transmission, like a zip file in a computer. And this was after I left. I was only there for a short period of time, in quotes. So it was afterwards. I was trying to reassess what would have happened to me, you know, during that. And I realized, okay, I've got this energy field in my head that is like a zip file. How do I open it? Well, I asked the question. The universe said like this. Boom! All of a sudden, I had like just so much information bombarding my brain. And I'm going like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. So that's how they talk to each other. They talk with burst transmissions. So a single bee is out there doing something, and they get a transmission that is like their dance. It's like full of information. You know, it and it's boom. You know, so that's the way that you've got the hive mentality. It's not like the Borg, where some queen is always in charge of you. No, you're in charge of your own little reality, little bee, and then you get directions like boom, burst transmissions of information. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes sense to me completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit like, you know, I once had an experience in the on the ranch with she was the oldest mare. And, you know, I've always been interested in animal communication. And she gave me this incredible communication about her life almost in one. It was like not seeing a series of things. It was like, as you said, it was a whole impression in one go. And it was quite emotional, actually, because it was such a sad story. But it happened similarly. It wasn't a linear thing. It was almost like you got it all at once, but you got the immediate understanding of what it was all about.
And did you get impressed by how fast and how much? I mean, it's like such a sudden amount of information, but it's coherent. Understandable.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's the way that we're going to go in our own minds in humanity. It makes sense to me that this is the next stage of communication. I think that what we're doing now, Jan, and I'm so sorry that you're leaving us radio. I'm sure you're going to be back, but, you know, right now.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that in the next hour. But when we're working with the radio and the video, that's starting to happen too. But we are influencing that collective consciousness of humanity. And I began to perceive, thankfully, because I've seen what the bees do, to see this very... it's subtle yet, but I think it's getting more observable, in that somebody who doesn't know crap shit about the Federal Reserve System all of a sudden is talking to you because they know it. And I'm getting this feeling that they're getting blasts of information into their heads that they're not having to get at linearly, because we're doing it for them. And we're giving them this whole package of this is what the Federal Reserve is and this is what's wrong with it. Boom. And all of a sudden somebody starts talking about the Federal Reserve, and now they've got a whole computer file in there that they access and they didn't even know was there, because it hadn't been there until we did our magic on the radio. That's what I think.
Yeah, unfortunately there is a lot of resistance out there to information that challenges people's belief systems and their affiliations, shall we say. I mean, it's been so apparent in the last few weeks with the political scene. It's just astonishing to me how blind so many people are, especially amongst those who consider themselves to be awakened.
Oh, let's talk about that, because that's something that is really getting very, very palatable. We're going to, I've got our favorite on, Diane Rose Kelly's link. So it's 5 minutes, but it's wonderful. And welcome back to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. This is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Derek Condit and Jan, who just changed her name from Jan Moore to Jan Shaw. And why don't you kind of give an update to what's happening here? But before we do that, let me just say this, that Dolly says, Nancy, please tell Jan I'm going to miss her whole bunches. Will you ask her to come on Say What with us this Saturday? I'd like to be on air with her one more time before she leaves and tell her my good thoughts and wishes will be with her. So that is from Dolly. And so what would you like to say
that's
to that?
Lovely. I think that's lovely. And, you know, I do see myself coming back very much because I'm so enjoyed this show with you, Nancy and Derek. And it's interesting. I've been through a very interesting period for the last couple of months and, you know, very much related to this whole shift we're going through and this whole ascension process and really digging into all the crap that I still got in there, you know. And this is something I've worked on since my awakening back in, well, I guess around 2000, and well, truly recognizing it as an awakening around 2008, 2009. And, you know, my mission is to promote conscious evolution, and if I'm going to do that, I've got to do it on myself. You know, I can't just talk about it. But it's been interesting because I've been going through this divorce, and it was finalized at the beginning of September. And I'd been considering, well, you know, I thought of changing my name back to something that was really me rather than the three husbands that I've had in this lifetime. And it was so I was debating, you know, what name should I go to? And it was coming to the deadline. So I decided to go back to the name Shaw, because that was in effect my maiden name, although it wasn't my birth name, and there's a whole other story to that. And so I thought, right, well, I'll put it on the divorce forms, so that's the name I'm going to go back to. And so when it came to September and the decree being finalized, it was all right, so I've got to be a Shaw again. And I really went through quite an emotional crisis over it, because I felt like this wasn't me. It's like Shaw was the name I had 40 years ago, and I'm such a different person from the Shaw person than I was way back then. I mean, I only had that name for a very short period because my mother remarried when I was about 17 or 18, I think it was. It was a very long divorce process that she went through, years and years. And so when she remarried, my middle brother and I changed our name to Shaw, which was her married name. And then I married when I was 23. So it was like 4 years maybe. But as I say, when I spent a whole Sunday changing all the stuff on my website, on my ebooks and everything. And Monday morning, I just woke up with this complete emotional reaction to it. This isn't me. I feel as though I've lost my identity, and who am I really meant to be? And so on and so forth. And it was actually Crystal Andersola, who's been a guest on my show several times, who taught me through this. And really was saying, this is not you losing your identity, this is you moving into your true identity. And so I became much more at peace with that. But I also have had messages through her that perhaps there is a better name for me, which I won't reveal now, but you may find that I end up with a different name, which is much more connected to the journey that I've been on in the last, 15 years, 14 years, something like that. So I am Jan's show at the moment, but watch this space because I might end up being Jan somebody else.
Okay.
But,
now,
yes,
now let me ask you, did you ever talk to that woman, Barbara? Oh, she's got the other two, three names because she's Nameology.
Yes.
Did you talk to her about this?
I did. And actually, when I posted on Facebook that I was going through this emotional stuff and this emotional shift, she offered to do a session with me. And we did that literally the Monday afternoon of this emotional meltdown day. And it was quite extraordinary because, I mean, I'd had that reading a couple of shows ago with Sophia, who went through the whole gamut of the names that I'd had from birth. And Barbara did this session with me. Really, it was interesting because she said the name Shaw is about sensitivity and, you know, perhaps emotional, over emotional. And that's perhaps being reflected in how you're feeling at the moment. But it was quite extraordinary because I was sat in my usual spot in front of my laptop. We did this session on Zoom, so it was on video. And behind me, I've got a small window, which I always keep the blinds closed on because otherwise it reflects on my laptop screen. And for almost the whole session, I had this huge ball of light behind me. It was quite, in fact, I get chills when I talk about it. And I even took a screenshot of it and posted it on Facebook. And it was just really quite extraordinary how it was almost a, well, Crystal called it a rite of passage. And I feel as though this is what I've been going through. And she was saying that, you know, there were certain characteristics in this that we could tweak the name, etc. But I have had a clue as to what my name should be, which numerologically speaking comes to the same number as my birth number, which is interesting. And perhaps you'll understand this, Nancy, because we've had this conversation before, but it's related to that beautiful horse that was so instrumental in my spiritual journey, shall we say.
That does not surprise me, because you have such a connection to this being.
Yes, completely. And I'm sure my family will think I'm completely crazy, but whatever. They don't really get me that much anyway. So a bit more craziness won't probably rock the boat.
Well, one of the things that I really, well, first off, your shows, Cosmic Creating Radio Show, was absolutely, to me, one of the best shows that we ever presented. And it's out there because you brought in so many people with different ways of looking at things that were all very accomplished in what they were doing and their ability to articulate concepts in a way that most of us could grasp was just stunning. So I have to commend you on your guests. But what I'd like you to do now is to tell people how they can get a hold of you and what it is that you're doing as a counselor, as, you know, a coach.
They can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net. And if they want to get hold of me directly, jan@thesuccessalchemist.net. And really, the key messages that I've been blessed with, I mean, I have to agree, my guests have been wonderful. Thank you for the compliment about the show, Nancy. You know, I've been blessed by learning so much from these people and also blessed with readings from them. Deborah Lupien did an Akashic Records and Soul Profile reading for me, and Barbara with her soul contract readings, and Zafia with the soul contract readings, and so much insight that really validated what I'd come to realize was my purpose for being here. And I really emphasize this in the coaching work that I do, in terms of you're here to live your purpose. And so you need to really get to the heart of what your mission is here. And I also link it to the manifestation process. I mean, Derek's story is a perfect example of that, that when we manifest things and people and information related to our purpose, we don't do it necessarily from a conscious desire. It comes through as guidance to lead us to that recognition of what we're here to do. So we're manifesting through our higher self and through our divine destiny when we're not conscious that that's the particular path we need to follow. And that applies to us being connected, Nancy. You know, it was such a synchronistic process for me being led to your website through Gene Rockefeller and Jack the Watcher. And of course, that resonated completely with me because of my soul connection with horses. And, you know, that led me to be.
Well, actually, you probably, I don't know that you know this, but one of the reasons that we have Cosmic Reality Radio as a station is because of you. And this show, which is interesting, because I wanted to get you on radio, and I wanted to get the Shungite show on radio, and it was like it wasn't an easy path. It wasn't like somebody was trying to stop me to do that on Wolf's Spirit. It's just I wasn't being drawn that way. I was actually being drawn into making a station. And the fact that I had you and Shungite Show and Nora Willows at the time, okay, and, you know, Haggy Shack's Say What and some of the other shows, it was such an easy transition. And I know that years ago, talk about manifestation. Let's see, this had to have been around, I would say, 2001 maybe. No, let me think about that. No, it would have been 2011-ish. I had written 9/11 Crusade, and Dr. Robin Falkov brought me on her radio station, and I didn't even know what internet radio was, and all of a sudden here I am on this format that I was like, oh my God, this is the wave of the future. I just knew that this format would allow people to reach out to people all over the world in a very economical way. So I said to the guy that fixed our computers and stuff, I said, you know a guy that's got money and he's also into conspiracy, correct? And he said, well, yeah, I've told you about him. And I said, and you're computer savvy. I said, what do you think about making a radio station? An internet radio station, told them a little bit about it, okay? But neither of the guys wanted to do it. I dropped it. And then, flash forward, all of a sudden, a set of circumstances took me exactly here. You know, it is a very strange thing when you start to watch it from, you know, over a period of time. Not what's happening right in front of you. You may have no clues to where that's taking you. But when you get the opportunity to look at it the way we're looking at what happened to Derek and what happened to me and what's happening to you right now, it's really fascinating. And you're saying or suggesting that we're manifesting this versus some kind of a divine cosmos controlling the synchronicities, Jan?
I think it's in a combination with that. You know, when we come here, we're coming here with a purpose. And of course, the universe, divine, whatever, is going to support us in that purpose. And so the path that we tread is very much geared towards us. I call it an apprenticeship. You know, we go through all these experiences up to the point of recognizing and stepping into that purpose. I mean, when I look back in hindsight over all the experiences that I've had in my almost 63 years, I'll be 63 on Sunday, 63 years young. You know,
happy birthday.
Thank you.
The best is yet to come.
Oh, yes. They've all contributed to the person that I am now and what I'm here to do. And, you know, even the most challenging, well, especially the most challenging circumstances, all contribute to that path that we're here to tread. I mean, my horse was an absolute example of that, because at the time that he had this equine nervous breakdown, it was the worst thing in my view that could have possibly happened to me, because I was working in corporate. I was doing this really challenging job running a major supply chain project in a big retail company in the UK. And suddenly I was having to do all this work. Well, not having to, I chose to do all this work with my horse. And at the time, of course, didn't realize that he was my life changer, which he was. And this is the point that has come across so much in the interviews that I've done, in terms of looking at the higher purpose of these experiences, even when they are so challenging, that I call it an evolutionary catalyst. They are absolutely essential for us, and we can either resist them and go into victim mode, or we can embrace them and see them as an absolutely essential part of our growth. And so I do believe it's divinely guided, but bear in mind that we come in here into this life with the intention of that purpose and fulfilling it. So thank you, God, divine, source, spirit, whatever you call it, for being the guide to actually fulfilling that. And it's so important to, and this applies to what's going on in the world at the moment, it's so important to look for that higher purpose and not get buried in the individual circumstances, so that you don't get that helicopter view of what's really going on.
You want the helicopter view, or you do not?
You need the helicopter view,
okay,
to see the connection between all these events in your life, to put, you know, to join the dots and go, wow, you know, this was absolutely essential for me to go through in order to be the person I am and to be doing what I'm doing. And so many of my guests have had hugely challenging upbringings, far more than mine, and yet it's so wonderful to see their perspective on it as being finding the positive gift in them that enables them to do what they're doing today, to have the empathy, to have had that experience. And this is what happens with me. I get people coming to me who are going through challenging experiences that are similar to the things that I've been through, so I can really understand what they're going through and help them from a point of empathy and similar experience, not just following some kind of textbook process. So to me, it's such a magical thing that we get all these things coming into our life, which
Jan, you just dropped off. Can you hear me?
Yeah, she's cutting out a little bit on my end, too.
Yeah,
I can hear you. I'm actually on my phone, and it keeps switching the
carrier. And she's faded again. Are you there, Derek? You look like you dropped out.
No, I'm here. She might be having the same issue I was. It was trying to jump back and forth from cell phone to
Wi-Fi. Can you hear me, Nancy?
Okay, yes, we can now. Talk. Jan, talk.
Is that me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, my phone has a habit of, I always turn the Wi-Fi off on my phone when I'm doing a Skype call, and it's got a mind of its own. It keeps turning it back on again, and that's when the signal gets iffy. So
that's what happened to mine as well. That's odd.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's some weird things going on with communication at the moment as well.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
So essentially, both your phones will go to Wi-Fi automatically after you've been on it for a while. In other words, the phone is taking over and deciding what to do?
Yes.
AI is
basically
here.
Oh, it's been here.
I'm sorry, go on.
So, is that for me, Nancy?
Yes. Okay. Let's see. Where were you when we lost you? You were basically saying that this is what going through your clients, you know, the adventures of seeing it from a helicopter view and giving them the guidance to get there so that they have a better perception of who they are and what their mission is, correct?
Yes, very much so. And really giving them a much more spiritual perspective on it, you know, rather than getting locked in that 3D view, which we're all programmed into, of, you know, you're just here to get a job and pay your bills and blah, 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 and which is so different. And, you know, it comes back to this definition of success. And this is what I'm in the process of refocusing on now, because so many of the readings that I've had have underscored that my role is in assisting in this conscious evolution, in this ascension process. And I kind of got diverted to even though I incorporate the business side of it because of all my experience, it had kind of got more emphasis than I feel it should have. So I'm really moving more into the spiritual mentoring now. And it's not hugely different from what I was doing. It's just the emphasis of what I was doing. And I really feel that that's the role that I need to play, because it's so critical at the moment that, as you said, you know, the collective consciousness is becoming more aware of what's really going on the planet, in the cosmos. And, you know, people who are awakening need the help to see their place in this and to see the spiritual significance of what they've been through and what they're going through, and to really release whatever is holding them back from fully stepping into their purpose.
So you've gone from advising, because you were in the corporate world, and you would advise people how to essentially succeed within the corporate concept. But now you're seeing that, and that would lead them to an understanding of their own spirituality. But now you're seeing that, no, the more important thing is to develop the spirituality path, and everything else falls in place. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, ever since I started coaching back in 2010, this was in the run-up to the festival, you know, I had very much shifted completely onto a path of, you know, my personal and spiritual development was the top priority, and the rest was kind of supporting that. And because what I believe, what I know, is that a person's life purpose, in terms of what they do, is the environment in which they're going to experience their spiritual development. Because, you know, if I go back to the festival, that was hugely impactful on me in terms of the process of organizing it. Because I had to face so many of my core issues, you know, fear. I still had this not good enough, and would I succeed, and fear around money and scarcity, and so much that I I had to work through. And I was given this vision as a divine mission. And it was an experience that I knew failure was not an option. No matter what challenges came up, I had to overcome them and I had to create this event. And it's so gratifying to hear, you know, I've had people on my show who are at the festival and to hear how amazing the impact of that event was on people is so gratifying. But it's interesting. One of the speakers at the festival was Panache Desai, and I would interview all the people as potential speakers. And when I spoke to Panache, he said, you know, you're not doing this to save the world or to, you know, for other people, you're doing this for yourself. And thankfully I'd done enough work on my ego not to come back to him and say, what do you mean I'm doing this for myself? But it was absolutely right, because yes, I was doing it to create the impact for other people, but I was also doing it for my own development. And when you see the things that you do as being, as bringing you the opportunity to address those core issues, the shadow side, whatever you care to call it, then you appreciate every experience, no matter how challenging. And this is something that I've been working through with clients ever since 2010, because it's those inner things that are the barriers, if you like, to people really stepping into their power and having the confidence to go forward, building the understanding of themselves and what they're here to do, and developing that intuition to an awareness to recognize the signs that they need to follow on their path. Because we all have the free will, we have the choice. You know, I was broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio before I came onto your station, Nancy, and I could have easily said, oh, well, Nancy, I'm quite happy with what I'm doing. You know, I'm going to stay there. But the universe kept giving me technical meltdowns on Blog Talk. And it was, if you remember, I came to you and I said, when's your station going to be up? Because this Blog Talk thing isn't working at all. I'm having this horrendous experience with it. And that was the catalyst for us to start broadcasting together. So I just think it's so interesting that, you know, these things happen. And one of the things that I teach is really building that present moment awareness to spot these signs and to recognize them for what they are, rather than, you know, getting stuck on the same path and thinking that the world's against you. The world is working for you, but often through the challenges that you have rather than the easy ride, because we don't change without challenge.
I love this, because you could have interpreted the technical problems as, oh, Mercury's in retrograde again, or say, this is an indicator that maybe this is not where I should be. And so you paid attention to the details and didn't have an automatic response or reaction, as I would say, to what the stimulus was. So that's really an important thing that you teach. Be aware of the details, correct?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And look deeper. I mean, Bill, my ex, had a great saying, look beyond the obvious. And unfortunately, so many people, and as I said in the first half, even those who consider themselves to be awakened, don't look beyond the surface and see the higher purpose to what's going on, particularly at the moment, which is such a critical time.
I want to cover something, because I was watching Ancient Aliens, like the new version, and the dang thing went from 8 o'clock until midnight, something like that. I think that it was the time, 4 hours. It was nuts. And I didn't even realize it was on until it had been on for an hour. And so there was nothing else on. They're normally good. So I turned it on. And the show was about transhumanism. And I only watched, I would say, an hour of it. It was because I was getting more unnerved the farther I watched. And so I only got a sampling of what was really presented there. But what was very freaky to me, Jan, were people who I had been following not only in Ancient Aliens, the TV series, but in their writings, on their websites, the radio shows that they've been on. And that includes, Dolly's going to know this. It's the guy with the fuzzy hair, Giorgio, and William Henry, Linda Moulton Powell, and a few other people that I can't even think of their names, were all saying that transhumanism is inevitable. And for those that don't know what the definition of transhumanism is, the best I can tell you, because I don't like even thinking about it, is that you've got robotic bodies that have your consciousness somehow uploaded into them. And to me, I find that this is absolutely abhorrent. And somebody else just recently said the same thing, or took that same... Yes, Dolly's saying Giorgio. Okay, good. Thank you, Dolly. That said the same thing about this inevitability of the evolution of humanity as we leave biological life and we become robots. And I'm stunned by so many people who seem to be reflecting this concept of inevitability, to the point that I'm wondering if we had some major shift in the timeline. Got any thoughts on that?
Interesting, isn't it, that you get what you focus on? And to me, that is, to me, it's part of the, let's say, the Illuminati Luciferian agenda, because I mean our bodies are our communication devices. It's our feelings in our bodies that alert us to those intuitive knowings. So, you know, the agenda throughout has been to program people not to tap into their intuition. It's ridiculed as being false, etc., etc., even though the cabal use those intuitive psychic abilities to dominate. But they're so afraid that we'll all awaken to them, that we'll have a knowing of what's really going on. And so that's their downfall. So to me, it's part of the agenda of control to keep people locked into the lower dimensions.
What was... I totally agree. I mean, I just... And thank you for putting that in my head. The feeling thing. That's where we feel our intuition. I do all my energy work by whether I'm feeling nauseous or not. You know, if I'm feeling nauseous, something's wrong. So yes, it's the feelings that how are they going to program that into a robot? Well, they'll tell you that they've got these, you know, they got these sex robots out there now, and that they're developing the ability so that when the robot skin is touched, that they will have a reaction to it. They'll feel it. I mean, all of this stuff they claim that they're going to be able to somehow duplicate, and the whole concept of soul and conscience, it just doesn't seem to exist. I mean, so to me, it's like terrifying that you're even thinking this, but what's really terrifying is like William Henry describing the Christian prophecy of the second coming and how Jesus is going to come down from the cloud, right? And he goes through and he takes everything that they say about the second coming and puts it in terms of transhumanism. And this is William Henry, somebody who I thought was one of the most spiritual people I'd ever heard. And I don't even know the guy. I mean, I was stunned. And Linda Moulton Howell, it's inevitable.
Nothing is inevitable.
It's like, what happened to these people? And I saw this happen. And Derek, are you still with us?
I'm here.
Your picture isn't showing on my Skype. That's why I was questioning it. Now, back a bit, okay, if you guys remember, there was a time where certain people started acting a little bit. Well, I'm not listening to them anymore. I'm not listening to them anymore. David Icke's one of them. Okay, all of a sudden it was like, nah, I don't want to listen to him. Hoagland, nah. You know, there was a whole bunch of people that seemed to fall off. David Wilcox got very close to it. Because it was like their message wasn't resonating with me and others. Right? And I think that something is happening again where the message from people that we have been trusting, listening to, maybe following, you know, is all of a sudden off kilter a little bit, or maybe a major way.
Yeah, and I think this is all to do with our own personal spiritual development, because, you know, I've looked back at some of my guests on my show and I'm thinking, why on earth did I have them on there? Because the resonance isn't there. I think as our vibration rises, then we lose the resonance with certain people that perhaps aren't at the same vibration. I mean, this is our mission, to raise vibration so that, you know, to the higher dimensional vibration. And, you know, I've followed various people over the years and moved on to others because they're still talking the same talk, which, you know, when we go beyond that, when we've assimilated that, we're looking for the next level and the next level. And if they're still talking at that same level, then we don't need them anymore. We need to find, whether it's through a person or through our intuition or being led to certain information, that's where we're going at the next step. And this is why I absolutely oppose this whole guru syndrome, because there are people that totally give their power away to the people that they've decided to follow, and they swallow everything that these people say without discernment, and just want to follow that same person and that same person and go to the same old things time after time after time. And because they are giving the power to that guru, very often what they have learned isn't assimilated and embodied. They can talk about it, but they don't actually do the work to make that transformation internally that uses that information. And these people have great information. I tend to look at them. It's the same going back to my horse. You know, I was studying everything I could to help this wonderful being to get over all his emotional issues. And I was reading a lot of books on natural horsemanship and so on and so forth. And there would be some things that resonated with me and some things that didn't. So I would take the things that did resonate and use those, but discard the rest. I mean, let's face it, nobody knows everything. And so as you do embody that learning, you're then ready to move to the next level. Because if you stay at the same level all the time and you're just taking the same information, there's no growth. So I think that's why we move on to get that higher level and that higher level. And I mean, when I started really, you know, I discovered, I was led to the discovery of the law of attraction, for example. I thought the movie The Secret was great and it was the answer to everything and it was a whole new concept. But as I then was led to more information, I realized that was a great starting point, but it wasn't the be all and end all. So, you know, I then got into much more of the spiritual and the metaphysical and the understanding of so much more about how the universe really works and our purpose and and so on and so forth, that to me now, the secret and all of that, the very simplistic view of law of attraction is no longer relevant to me. And I think that's what happens, that we are ready for the next level and the next level. And while the people that we've been following in the past have done a great service for us, we've kind of graduated to another level, just as we do in school. We don't go through the same year every year and the same classes every year. We move on to another level of learning, complexity, whatever. And it's the same with our own personal and spiritual development. I mean, some of the things I know now, I would have gone, holy cow, years ago, because it would have been too far on from what I was ready for. And again, the universe works beautifully in presenting us with the next level of information that we need, as long as we are aware enough to spot that.
Well, I think that the people that, let's say the ones we're leaving, okay, I think maybe that's why they get stuck in their story, is because there'll be another group coming along that needs their message. So they get stuck in their story to give that message to the next group. And what I'm perceiving now, okay, is that those of us that are in the graduating classes are not following somebody. We're following ourselves. We're much more attuned to what we need, what we think, what our mission is, than following gurus, following leaders. You know what I'm saying? Do you see that?
Yeah, completely. Completely. It's about our path and what we need as the next level that is guiding us. Not, this person's so wonderful and absolutely love him or her, et cetera, et cetera. And, I completely agree with that, Nancy.
Yeah, we're the people we've been looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like Derek, if he got stuck in the, conventional way of beekeeping, he'd still be pouring toxic chemicals on the hives. But he had to start at that point in order to move on to the next. You can't just, it's like school. You can't jump from elementary school to PhD. You've got to go through the grades. And it's the same with our spiritual development. We have to go through the grades so that we're not having to make a huge leap that creates resistance.
Derek.
I was just going to say, that's a really good description or analogy as you were describing there, Jan. And how I kind of look at it is like a highway with a park and rides or rest stop. So we're all going down that highway or path, and some of us get off at that rest stop for a short time and learn. And some of us need to be there longer than others to maybe use a restroom or get some coffee. And some of us, maybe move on to the next one. But there's always going to be another one further down. And maybe we'll stop at the third rest stop, and somebody who waited at the second one back will catch up to us when they're ready. So there's a whole leapfrog thing there. When we're all ready, it's within our own time and we move on. And I loved your description, Jan, of the, taking the aspect or the view from the helicopter. That's when we're down here in the muck and the turmoil and the drama, it's hard to do that, especially once you get out of it. Cause at least for me, it seems like I'm on to the next thing right away and moving 100 miles an hour and fast forward. Well, I need to take time, jump in my helicopter, go up and take a better look, take a overall perspective and see what just happened, what's ahead, and go from there. So as every show I've heard you on, Jen, I feel the need. I need to grab a pencil and paper and just take notes and write things down. Oh, what else did she say? Oh, that's a great point. And it's similar to Nancy, but you're just definitely one of those people because you just bring so much to light and great ways of looking at it. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Derek. And, one of the core teachings in my programs is the power of neutrality, as I call it, because this is, I mean, it's a universal law. Nothing has meaning until we assign an interpretation or a perception to it. And I the way I describe it is it's like a tightrope. You know, you're walking the tightrope of neutrality because this is always the starting point. It might not seem that way, but it always is, that you are facing a situation and you have the power to choose how you perceive it. So the way I look at it is if you step off to the left off the tightrope into the abyss of negativity, you know, you get stuck in that victim, that poor me, the world's against me, victim of circumstance. But if you step off onto the solid ground of positivity, that enables you to get a very different perspective on things that actually serves you. And this is not just about, you know, oh, I've got to think positive all the time and I can't look at the negative because that doesn't work. But it's having the ability to really become what Eckhart Tolle talks about as the observer of the situation. It allows a certain detachment that gives you the space and the time to really consider the circumstances that you're in and actually decide on how you're going to move forward from this point. Because, and again, you know, my horse has taught me this, that if I react to a negative situation, like my horse is about to explode beneath me, you know, I could go into fear and think, oh my God, you know, I'm going to fall off, I'm going to get injured, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that. Instead, they taught me to focus on what's the outcome that I want here. I'm aware, I have an awareness of this potentially dangerous situation, but if I focus on that, I'm going to compound the problem. I'm going to manifest the problem. I'm going to create a higher level of fear and reaction in the horse. So I need to focus on calm, on confidence, on safety, on all of these things. And this is also the root of being able to see the higher purpose rather than reacting to the surface appearance of things. So, you know, you can look at certain things and say, okay, what was the gift in this experience? What was the benefit that I got from this, you know, really challenging time and an experience I was going through? And even if it's only I survived it, you know, it's enabling you to move forward onto the next stage of growth rather than getting stuck in this blame and resentment, and even for yourself, guilt and shame, and oh, I was a fool to let this happen, and all of this stuff that really is so paralyzing for people. And this is what we're seeing a lot of. People are getting triggered at the moment by everything that's going on in the political world. They think the whole world is falling apart. It's chaos. It's this. It's that. I don't agree with that politician. I don't agree with this. And what they don't realize is that those triggers are giving them a message that they've got some work to do on themselves. It's reflecting back to them the things that they are still holding within them. And I think the women's movement is a great example of that, especially with this Kavanaugh hearing. You know, I got these posts on Facebook from women that were saying, putting out this hashtag, we believe. And my response to that, you know, I'm a Libran, so it's about justice and balance. And my response was, I'm not just going to believe somebody because they're a woman. I'm going to look at what are the facts in this case? Where's the corroboration? Where's the evidence? I'm going to hold in neutrality until I see what is really going on here. But this comes back to this whole thing about women wanting to, you know, kill all the men off, because there's a lot of archetypal pain in women because of how they've been treated over the centuries. And a lot of women are still carrying that. And so if a woman claims to have been sexually assaulted, for example, oh, well, you know, we're all victims. I've been through the same thing. So it must be true. But interestingly, there was another case recently that I saw on Facebook about a football player that had been accused of rape and was in prison for 6 years until the woman admitted on Facebook that she'd made up the whole story. So we can't just assume because
I lost Jan again.
Because they're a woman.
Jan, you there? Hello? Oh, I see that those men cut her off, Derek.
That's probably exactly what it was.
Oh, no, they don't want to talk bad about the men. Oh, no. Jan, can you hear us? Okay, she's back.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We do.
Yeah, my Wi-Fi switched on again. Yeah, well, I mean, what I was saying is that unfortunately, there's so much division being created at the moment, women versus men and left versus right and all the other divisions. People need to consider every circumstance and give it their full attention before they jump to conclusions and use their discernment. I'm not just going to support women because they're women. And I'm actually against positive discrimination because there are some women, mentioning no names, who are horrendous, who are so self-serving, so aggressive, so opposite to the divine feminine. So we have to consider every situation and every person on their merits, not whether they're wearing a skirt or a pair of trousers.
Well, you know, oddly enough, I felt that the man had a lot of feminine energy in him.
Yes. I mean, I watched, because of all these posts on Facebook and, you know, this guy is so angry. He's obviously an abuser. And, you know, Dr. Ford is telling the truth and poor woman and everything else. So I actually took the time to watch the whole hearing. And I saw a man who was absolutely distraught by what he was being put through. And I didn't resonate with Dr. Ford at all. She didn't seem to be credible. There didn't seem to be any corroborative evidence. And as it was said, that, you know, very possibly she has been through a very traumatic experience. But is it this person that was responsible? And nothing seemed to back that up at all.
It was an interesting and a very dangerous excursion into the far reaches of BS politics. I mean, there was no backup for those charges. They came in at a late. Everything was wrong with it. But in the end, the man is going to be the Supreme Court Justice. So we're at the top of the hour. Jan, stay in touch and hopefully come back soon. And anything else? You give your website one more time.
And I was going to say, Nancy, if Dolly and you would like me on Saturday, I'd be very happy to do that.
Oh, okay then. There you go, Dolly. You got your wish. She'll be on Saturday. Jan on, say what, 6 to 8 Eastern time. Awesome.
Absolutely. Awesome. So my website is thesuccessalchemist.net. And my email is jan@thesuccessalchemist.net. And I'm also on Facebook. It's now Jan Shaw, The Success Alchemist. And I have a Facebook group, which I would welcome anybody to join. It's Unstoppable You, Breakthrough to Brilliance. So that's where
That is Shaw, Shaw, yes. Because she pronounces right. It sounds like Shaw.
Well, yeah, that's how we pronounce it in England.
Derek, thank you so very, very much. Would you like to say goodbye to the audience?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And I want to say thank you to Jan for being here. We appreciate it. It was a fantastic show as always.
Well, thank you, Derek. It's been a pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, then. I just muted the wrong people. I muted myself. Here we go. We're going to play the outro.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggishack Radio.